Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. The idea of a driverless car has always been the stuff of science fiction, or maybe not even science fiction. Even George Jetson sat in the driver's seat of his personal flying saucer. But driverless cars are a technology that may well be on our doorstep. The technical aspect aside, though, is society and is our psyche ready to relinquish control of the steering wheel? And where will the consumer fit in? The debate may be driven as much by insurance companies and lawyers as by the driving public. Lake Effect Automotive contributor Mark Savage tries to steer the conversation, so to speak, with our Dan Harmon. Savage looks at where things stand today.
Well, I think in practicality, it's not that far off that we could have that. It's when we can have that that meets all the right safety standards and that the automakers feel secure and that they're not going to get sued every time someone crashes, which liability is one of the big issues of this. But I didn't want to get into that right away. But the way I look at this is that there are a lot of sensors and software that go into the cars now. And I think this all started with cruise control of things to help us drive our cars either more easily or more safely. And cruise control also helps you with the fuel mileage it has over the years. So that's great. You know, then we get things like traction and stability control, so you're not going to spin the car as much or spin the tires as much. Anti-lock brakes so you can stop more safely. And now we have all sorts of other things. There's electronic controlled transmissions, which I know we've mentioned in the past that they're so efficient that they're, you know, super fuel efficient. And I think what I've seen in the last couple of years is a lot more parking sensors and backup cameras and so forth, so you don't back into cars when you're parking. I just did it over the weekend, had a car with a backup thing. It was perfect for getting and parking downtown, not far from here near the public market. And you could see exactly where that car is behind you. You can parallel park very easily. But having said that, now we have cars that will parallel park for you at the press of a button, basically. And I believe it's BMW is coming out with one that will also perpendicular park so you can go into a parking lot and press the button, which, I mean, to me, these are fairly easy things to do. Parallel parking may be a little more complex, but it's possible to be doing all this because we have all these sensors on the cars. Some are already there and some are now being added so they can look at the lanes and they can see the lines and they can measure what's next to you. So it's not that far off. I mean, I have an example. I mean, I know I'm rambling on here, but I just had this Lincoln MKZ has the lane departure system. Many of the luxury cars have that now, but most of the time it just beeps at you incessantly when you get close to a line on the side of the road, either side of the road. That to me is annoying, and actually I think it can startle the driver enough that maybe it doesn't help you drive more safely. But this one slightly corrects your driving. So you're driving, you wander towards that center line, and it just slightly tugs the wheel, you know, in your hands, just slightly back, you know, over to the right, so you're back in the center of the lane, and always does it on the other side too. I tried it. I only had it not see the line one time in my week's worth of driving. So if it can center you in the lane, in theory, you can keep driving even when you get to a turn in the road, and it's going to sense where that line is and keep you going around the corner. Now, it would probably have to read things a lot quicker than this does even. And I'm sure you're going to want some backups on that. And maybe we need to have sensors in the roads too, which would take a lot of infrastructure. And that would take forever for us, I think, to get that into this country as bad as our roads are. But it is possible. And more cars are getting all these electronic sensors in there that will help at least keep you in your lanes.
I wonder how well that will work on our, you know, in the snow belt, you know, these lines that get washed out. I mean, they're not even there anymore.
Well, and that will be an issue probably here more than it would be, let's say, in Florida or California, where you're less likely to have your lines eroding from the side of the road or covered by ice, snow, slush, whatever. But I'm guessing that over time here, I don't know, you know, maybe it's going to take another 10 years to get all this figured out, but it won't be long before you can just sit in your back seat and relax and let the car drive itself.
I have to ask, though, who is the driving force, excuse the pun, behind driverless cars? I mean, every driver I talk to or ask them, they don't want this. So what is the real force behind it?
Well, I do sometimes think it's if they build it, they will come. It's technology, and it was, as we've said in many other times, is sometimes the technology is for technology's sake. And I guess there's nothing wrong with proving you can do this, and there have been several contests where people are given, you know, $1 million if you can come up with a car that drives itself and so forth. That's great. I don't know that there is a big driving force, as you say, to get people to not drive their cars. But I guess in the long view of looking towards how to make cars safer and safer, this is another option that's out there. And, you know, is this a great option? I don't know. My concern is always that it keeps adding more and more cost to the car. And, well, I enjoy driving, so I like being behind the wheel and being in charge of the car. So,
I mean, there's some really great safety features like the backup that mm-hmm. you were just saying, and then accident avoidance things, which will hit the brakes for you, and they, whatever. And I want to ask if this is an insurance-driven thing, because the collision avoidance technology will almost eliminate a lot of rear-end collisions
right.
for
and,
you. So is that another reason for this, is insurance?
Well, insurance, I'm sure, will like a lot of these features, like you say, that avoid dents and dings and more serious accidents too. I don't know if insurance will like the liability issues that this will raise. Let's say I have a so-called self-driving autonomous car, and I'm sitting there reading my book as we're zooming down the highway at 80 mile an hour, 70 mile an hour, whatever the rules are at the time. And, you know, someone does pull on from an entry ramp and they're going much slower. And while it's beeping and buzzing and putting on the brakes, it can't avoid the accident and hits it. Let's just say it's a property damage accident. Well, whose insurance company's paying for it? Am I suing, you know, the automaker, the programmer, the company that did the programming, the hardware people, like the sensor? Was the sensor faulty? I mean, it's going to raise a whole different level of who can be sued and who's really responsible for the accident. Or is the driver ultimately responsible for all accidents? Well, you know, some cases have been made prior to this where something failed on a car and the automaker was sued. So
that was Toyota, wasn't it?
Yeah, Toyota and Audi also. So,
well, just a question that leaped to my mind that I'm not trying to be glib here was just the amount of drunk driving that goes on. Is this something that would really help, aside from people just not drinking and driving?
It's possible that this is a potential drunk driver's dream car, assuming you don't have to use a breathalyzer to actually open the door to get in and say, you know, take me home. And the car programs itself and keeps you between the lines and drives the speed limit on the way home. I mean, this could be a win-win for everybody in that regard. You know, I hate to say it, but Wisconsin has a lot of folks drinking and driving, and this may be maybe it'll be known as the Wisconsin feature on certain cars.
Well, all right. In all of these proposals and ideas, is there any discussion amongst the powers that be that, you know, how much is too much? When do you cross that line from driver-assisted technology to driverless cars, or however you put it?
Well, yeah, autonomous driverless cars, I think some of us are asking those questions, and I'm sure that there's somebody in all of the car companies saying, is there a market for this? But you keep moving towards it. And maybe by the time that it happens, maybe it is 5, 7, 8, 10 years, I don't know. But it's I think, certainly foreseeable in our future. Maybe by then the market's there. I think those of us who think still spending $20,000 for a car is a substantial amount will not be able to have it on their car. So there's still going to be other people driving while this autonomous car is aiming itself down the road and doing what it does. I would think that maybe some wealthier buyers would be willing to take the chance on this and think, oh, this is kind of cool. I want to have the latest gimmicky, you know, interesting high-tech thing out there. I mean, somebody wants the iPhone 75 or whatever it is, right? So they may want this. I don't think it would be a big seller for the broad market because I think it's going to add a lot of cost to the car.
Right.
But it may be a market for somebody.
How much of this is GPS driven? Again, no pun intended. I mean, it exists. I mean, there's a car that Google has been working with to actually guide the car with GPS. So are these tied together necessarily?
Yes, I think they are. And I think GPS has become so much more prevalent and people accepting it and people buying it and people having it on their cell phone. So when they, you know, enter downtown area of a new city there and they can program where they're going to walk. It is definitely driven by that technology and I think people's comfort level with it. So again, you know, 5 years from now, maybe we'll all have a GPS thing in our glasses and we'll never have to look up anything ever again. And maybe this will just be accepted that my car knows where it's going. I don't have to. I just think that that's a little bit of a stretch for those of us who maybe won't be able to afford this right off the bat, and I think we'll be a little leery of that.
All right. Well, I guess we should enjoy driving our cars by ourselves for a while.
Drive your car while you still can, and be sure that there'll be some laws coming down the road to eventually limit this or put some brakes on it, as the case may be.
No pun intended.
No pun intended.
All right. Well, thanks, Mark.
Thanks.
Mark Savage writes about cars for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and is associate publisher for four magazines at Waukesha's Kalmbach. They are American Snowmobiler, Classic Toy Trains, Fine Scale Modeler, and Scale Auto Magazine. He's also our regular automotive contributor, and he talked with Dan Harmon. Milwaukee's fine dining scene has come a long way in three decades. One key reason has been award-winning chef Sanford D'Amato. We'll meet him and talk with him about his new memoir when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.